Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's radio. Free.
Hi, welcome to Living on Purpose. Today is December 8th, 2016. My name is Lynn Thompson, and I am showing up here on the Rabble Podcast Network every Thursday. So by Friday morning, you will be able to hear a new episode. So today I decided to pull something out of the Living on Purpose library, a bit of a timeless piece. It's 25 minutes long. It's all about the magic of asking. And I really enjoyed listening to it again this week. It's actually something I recorded in 2008. So that is a little while ago. However, there's a timelessness about the excerpts that I'm reading from this book called The Aladdin Factor. And I'm sharing a few thoughts along the way. And something I realize isn't in that recording that I've often mentioned to people, and this might apply to you. Let's just say you're traveling and you're at the airplane counter. Basically, it's asking for an upgrade, whether it's traveling by train or by plane, or if you're at a hotel. So you ask for an upgrade and then just be quiet. If they say yes, well, great. If they say no, I'm sorry, that's not going to be possible, again, just pause and see what happens. Because quite often, if you ask something of someone that they can't do for you or can't provide for you, they will then feel like they want to offer you something in its place, right? So you may not get an upgrade at the hotel. However, they might say, well, I'm afraid I can't do that. I can give you a voucher for breakfast. I know one time I was traveling by plane recently, and I was one of the last people to the counter. I think it was a fairly quick turnaround between flights. I hadn't been put in a window seat, but I really wanted to be in a window seat. And I said, would you possibly still have a window seat available? And sure enough, I was even able to see the seating spaces, and there were a couple right near the back of the plane. And I actually got a window seat and empty seats beside me. It was really amazing and wonderful. So it's really exciting to ask for things. And I think quite often we hold back from that. So that's about the end of my preamble for this segment today of Living on Purpose. Thank you so much for listening and for being in touch. My name is Lynn Thompson, and my email address is livingonpurposelynn@gmail.com. Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N. Thanks to Rabble Podcast Network for this great platform. Thanks for listening. Aloha. I've just finished reading a fantastic book. Have you read a book recently? Is it something that you incorporate into your life? The great thing about reading a book is that you don't have to read it all at once. You can read just a few pages at a time if you approach it like it's just a sweet little treat that you give to yourself, maybe first thing in the morning or before you go to sleep at night. If you have a book that keeps drawing you back to more nuggets of wisdom, it will so enhance your life, as it has mine, for sure. This book is called The Aladdin Factor. And it's written by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. Many of you would be familiar with these authors because they started the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Now, this book, The Aladdin Factor, was written in 1995, I believe. Most of us are familiar with the story of Aladdin, and he finds the bottle with the genie in it. And the genie asks him, "What do you want?" He gets three wishes. Aladdin needs then to figure out what he wants to ask for. Really, this book takes us through all the reasons that hold us back from asking, and some of those reasons we know very well. We don't want to appear foolish, we don't want to appear weak, we don't want to look like we don't know everything, and yet, who does know everything? And how likely are you to do something if you are told to do something, or if you've been asked to do it? People want to be asked. They want to know that they can help. So if someone said to you, give me $100,000, what's the difference between that and the person saying, what would I need to do for you to give me $100,000? One of the stories in this book is about an organization who had money to give away and wanted to be giving it away in a helpful way to schools and groups. They actually did grant a large amount of money to a particular school. And the other schools in that area said, well, we could use that money too. Why didn't you give some to us? And this organization said, you didn't ask. How many times do we hold ourselves back from asking? We might think that we're not worthy of what we're asking for, or that, oh, that's impossible. They won't say yes to that. Well, if they aren't even asked, they don't even have the opportunity to say yes or no. Some of the great little stories in this book, The Aladdin Factor, to share with you today. So I'm going to start with one of the stories in the first part of the book that is contributed by Jack Canfield. And he writes here, I was at a 10-day meditation retreat, and about 7 days into it, they conducted private interviews with everyone to make sure we were staying sane. The whole retreat was done in silence, with no eye contact, discussion, journal writing, or reading. You just meditate, walk, eat, and sleep. I remember the instructor asking me how I was doing. I said, I think I'm flipping out. Everything I ever believed in doesn't make sense anymore. Everything I ever thought was reality, I'm no longer sure of. I thought he was going to say, okay, go eat some meat and get out of here. Watch some TV, put your feet in the dirt, or something like that. Instead, he said, that's good. I was shocked. I was thinking, how can that be good? He said, most of what you believe isn't true anyway. You must empty yourself of all your preconceived notions so that you can become acutely aware of what is really there. All your belief structures are dissolving so that you can enter a space of pure awareness. I left the interview feeling as if my head were spinning. I went out onto the porch of the large Georgian mansion we were in and wrapped my arms around this huge column as if I were holding on for dear life. I felt as if I were no longer sure of anything. It was a state of I don't know. Then I had this huge flood of memories of times in my life when it was not okay not to know. Like when my dad said, where's the hammer? I don't know. You damn well better know you had it last. It wasn't safe not to know. I remembered my first year of teaching when my students would ask me questions I didn't know the answers to. It wasn't okay not to know, so then I started faking it, pretending to know, pretending to have read books I hadn't read, laughing at jokes I didn't understand, nodding my head in understanding when I was lost. I became afraid to say, what does that word mean? Or, could you explain that again? And that's a brief contribution by Jack Canfield, who is one of the authors and editors of this book called The Aladdin Factor. Now, there's a lot of great ideas in here. And today on Living on Purpose, I'm just going through to share some of these stories with you, some of the ways that we can get beyond the fear of asking, and some of the benefits of asking, some of the surprising things that can happen when you ask and when you persevere. Yeah. Okay, so here's a story about a man who lived in Vancouver in British Columbia. One weekend, a man named Malcolm, who lived in Vancouver, took his fiancée hiking through the north woods of British Columbia. Somehow, they managed to get between a mama bear and her baby cubs. The mama bear, wanting to protect her cubs, grabbed hold of his fiancée. Malcolm is just 5 feet 2 inches tall, and the bear was enormous, but he felt courageous and managed to disentangle his fiancée, whereupon the mama bear grabbed him and proceeded to crush every major bone in his body. She finished by sinking her claws into his face and ripping straight across it back toward the scalp. It's amazing that Malcolm lived. He was in restorative surgery for the next 8 years. By that time, the doctors had done all the cosmetic surgery they could do. It hadn't helped much, and he saw himself as an ugly person. He no longer wanted to expose himself to society. So one day, Malcolm went in his wheelchair to the 10th floor roof of his rehabilitation center and was preparing to push himself over the edge when his father appeared. His father had heard an intuitive voice telling him to go see his son. Just in time, his father appeared at the top of the stairs and said, "Malcolm, wait a second." Recognizing his father's voice, Malcolm turned around in his wheelchair. His father said, "Malcolm, every human being has scar tissue deep inside him somewhere. Most of us wear it under a smile, some cosmetics, and nice attire. You get to wear yours on the outside, but we're all the same, son. We've all been deeply wounded in some way." Malcolm could no longer thrust himself off that building. A short time later, a friend of his brought him some motivational tapes to listen to. On one tape, he heard the story of Paul Jeffers, who lost his hearing at age 42 and went on to become one of the most outstanding salesmen in the world. Malcolm heard it when Paul said, "Setbacks are given to ordinary people to make them extraordinary." Malcolm said to himself, "That's me. I am extraordinary." Malcolm had to confront his fear of being rejected because of his physical disfigurement. He woke up every day knowing that was a possibility, but he forged ahead anyway. Malcolm decided to become an insurance salesman, a position that would expose him to rejection many times a day. He decided to make his potential handicap an asset. He put his picture on his business cards, and when he gave them to people, he would say, "I'm ugly on the outside, but I'm beautiful on the inside if you just get a chance to know me." A year later, Malcolm became the number one insurance agent in Vancouver. And that was contributed by Mark Victor Hansen. Now, they suggest some exercises to do to get over the fear of asking, of feeling foolish because you're asking something that's obvious. One of the exercises is to go along, let's say you're on Main Street, to walk along on Main Street and stop somebody as they're passing by and say, "Can you tell me where Main Street is?" They'll say, "Well, you're on Main Street." The thing is that if you can get over asking simple questions for something that's obvious, it helps you work up to the bigger questions of asking things that you may just talk yourself out of because you think they're impossible. Now, this is a really good point that Jack makes in the book a couple of times, and here's just a brief reading from Barbara DeAngelis. "You can't ask for what you want unless you know what it is. A lot of people don't know what they want, or they want much less than they deserve. First, you have to figure out what you want. Second, you have to decide that you deserve it. Third, you have to believe you can get it. And fourth, you have to have the guts to ask for it." One of the things that Jack says, if you're going to ask for something, quite often it's because you don't have it already. So if you ask for it and you don't get it, you're not really any further behind because you didn't have it already anyway. So if you ask for it and you get it, bonus. If you ask for it and you don't get it, well, you still don't have a date for dinner. You didn't have one before, you don't have one now. Enjoy a meal by yourself. You know how people say, what's the worst that can happen? So when you find yourself afraid to ask or afraid to take an action, stop a minute and take a deep breath. Then rationally ask yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen? Is it really that bad? Can I survive it? If you think you can and what you want is important, then go for it. Now here's a good one, and this is from a successful salesman who asked to remain anonymous. "One day it suddenly dawned on me. I was standing in the hall outside the door of someone I wanted to get an appointment with. I was having trouble getting in to see him. The secretary had just told me that the person was busy and that I could not go in. I figured that she was just doing her job of protecting her boss from time wasters. I, however, didn't feel that what I had to offer was really a waste of time. I knew that my service had the potential of saving this man a lot of time and money over the years. I also knew that if I simply opened the door and went in anyway, the worst that could happen is that the man would throw me out of his office and I would be back in the hall. I figured I was already in the hall, so it couldn't get any worse than it already was. So I opened the door and walked right in. And you know what? I got the account. The buyer said, 'I figure anyone that is that determined to get an order will probably be that determined to meet our needs.'" Isn't that a great example? Dale Carnegie says, "Do the thing you fear to do and keep on doing it. That is the quickest and surest way ever yet discovered to conquer fear." There's also the whole idea, too, that there's never the best time to start or the optimum set of circumstances. The best way to start is to start. Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen are talking through different ideas. Like, here is this: why people resist change and growth.
If all of the ideas and behaviors discussed in this book are so good for us, why do so few people really ever change? Why do we resist the very things that would make us free? Well, the answer is that we're creatures of habit. We get used to being a certain way, even if it doesn't work very well. So he suggests to try a little experiment. And you can do this because you're not holding the book here. You can try this. If you're able to do this while you're listening to this show, which is Living on Purpose, see if you can do this and just see how it feels. Fold your hands in your lap. Notice which thumb you have on top, left or right. Refold your hands so that the other thumb naturally ends up on top. This involves moving every finger in the previously lower hand up a notch. Notice how that feels. Does it feel awkward, uncomfortable, strange, weird, or wrong? Notice what your body wants to do. Does it want to go back to the first position, your normal position of folding your hands together, your habitual condition? Let yourself do that. Go back to the original position. How does that feel? Does it feel better, right, or comfortable again? Is it a relief to be back to this position? In that little exercise is contained the basic reason why most people never experience the quality of life they secretly yearn for. We would rather be comfortable than uncomfortable. We would rather be comfortable than do what is required to produce the desired result. We get stuck in what psychologists call the comfort zone. Oh, now, are you ready for this quote? This is from Stan Dale. Comfort zones are plush-lined coffins. When you stay in your plush-lined coffins, you die. And winners are those people who make a habit of doing the things losers are uncomfortable doing. And that's by Ed Foreman. So you need to give yourself permission to be awkward. I think that what happens is that a lot of us want to be perfect at doing things right away. Well, were we perfect at walking? Were we perfect at riding a bike? If we'd given up the first time we fell down when we were learning to walk, we wouldn't be running now, right? So giving yourself permission to be awkward, giving yourself permission to be a beginner, to be learning. Here's a quote here. I was afraid to go bowling unless I already knew how to do it. Because I was a good athlete in some areas, football, basketball, volleyball, rugby, and track, I felt I had to appear to be good in all sports. I was so afraid to look like a klutz. It literally ran me. As a result, I missed out on a lot of fun and growthful experiences. I finally realized that I had to give myself permission to be a learner, a beginner again, like I was in the fifth grade. I remember the first time I fell off the ski lift at the top of the mountain in Sun Valley, and a four-year-old skier went by me with all the style and mastery of an Olympic skier. I had to remind myself that this was my first day of lessons, and he had probably been skiing for over a year. I had the right to be awkward. I also had the right to seek out and get good instruction. Over the years, I've noticed some people engage in sports and never improve. They don't seek out coaching. We all need to be willing to utilize coaches and mentors. Every time I take a skiing or tennis lesson, I get better. I'm always amazed at how much I improve, especially if I practice in between. And that's a little note from Jack Canfield. Now, you see, even well-known people go through this. Even if we are successful in one area, we can often be challenged in another area. No matter how well-known or confident a person is, no matter how often they stand up in front of people and do what they do, whether it's singing or speaking or performing, everyone appreciates applause and appreciation. People appreciate appreciation. Don't you? Don't you love to be told that something that you did made an impact on somebody's life? Okay, what's the next thing I wanted to share with you from the Aladdin Factor? Oh, this is a really good one. A lot of the time, people want a hug, and they don't ask for a hug. And they get resentful that the person can't read their mind and know that they want a hug. So, ask for a hug. I think this is one of my favorite stories in this book. This is about Rick Little. At 20 years old, Rick Little became obsessed with his vision of a program for high school students that would teach them how to get along better with people in their lives, how to find and keep a job, how to handle conflict, how to be a good parent, and how to handle money. For over 2 years, Rick wrote and sent out 155 grant proposals. On his 156th try, spurred on by the power of his conviction, he managed to talk himself past several secretaries and secured a lunch date with Dr. Russ Mobby, president of the Kellogg Foundation, 2 weeks later, Dr. Mabi called him and told him that the trustees had voted against the $55,000 that Rick had requested. Rick felt tears pressing behind his eyes. Then he heard these words. However, the trustees did vote unanimously to give you $130,000. Now, what if Rick had given up after the 100th try? What if he had not persevered? Since that time, Rick has raised over $100 million to fund his dream. The Quest Living Skills programs are currently taught in over 30,000 schools in all 50 states and in 32 countries. 3 million children per year are being taught important life skills because one 20-year-old refused to take no for an answer. Rick Little's life is a testament to the power of commitment to a high vision, coupled with a willingness to keep on asking until one manifests the dream. And David Viscott has a quote here, "In the end, the only people who fail are those who do not try." I'm really wanting to share with you the incredible changes that can come in your life by reading books regularly and by reading uplifting material when you're reading those books. Even if you're reading a page a day, you'll get through a book and you'll learn valuable tools to improve your life. This is The Aladdin Factor by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, which includes all kinds of amazing stories that support the great message that they have here about asking. There's a source unknown quote at the end in the bibliography section. It says, "The person who can read and doesn't has no advantage over the person who can't read." Why aren't you? Why aren't you making use of this incredible gift? You put the energy into learning how to do when you were younger, or maybe when you were older. Perhaps you've been improving your reading skills. So put those skills to work and read. It'll improve your life dramatically. If one of your answers is, "I can't afford to buy all those books," the library is such an incredibly rich resource. One of the things that comes up a lot in this book about asking, that it's way more powerful to ask rather than telling someone. So here's an example that Jack and Mark mention here in the book. Make sure that when you are asking for what you want from your spouse, for example, you are really asking. When we get afraid or unconscious, we often revert to old patterns of behavior such as whining, complaining, nagging, and shooting on our partner. No one likes to have a pile of shoulds heaped upon them. The natural tendency is to rebel and resist. Whenever you hear yourself saying should to your partner, stop and ask yourself, "What do I really want here?" And then make a clear and succinct request. Towards the end of the book, The Aladdin Factor, they have some really great questions to ask of ourselves. And here's one with a story by Jim Cathcart. And the question is, how would the person I'd like to be do the things I'm about to do? How would the person I'd like to be do the things I'm about to do? So Jim says here that this question has got to be one of the most stimulating questions I've ever heard. It forces you to focus on the nobler side of yourself. Focus on the part of you that you really admire and would like to see living more fully in you. Start asking yourself, how would that good part of me, how would that talented part of me, the intelligent part, the giving part of me, do the things I'm about to do? This will shift your perspective. That shift will accomplish everything because you will start to be a little more considerate, a little bit more thorough, and a little bit more thoughtful before doing something. A guy named Tim Seward came up to me after a speech and asked me for some input. He was working for a company called Tidy Car, an auto detailing company. I told him about that question, and he went home and applied that thinking and did very well in his business. When it came time for their international sales convention, I was MC that evening at the banquet. Dennis Waitley had given a speech, and I turned the microphone over to the president, and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, in a few minutes, I'm going to give away that white Corvette in the corner. That Corvette is going to go to the person who won our international sales contest. This year, the contest was very tight all the way up to position number 2, but number 1 led the contest with 300 points more than number 2. Number 2 led number 3 by 1 point, 3 led 4 by 2 points, so that gives you some idea of the spread. This year, the winner of that white Corvette, the international sales leader from Bay City, Michigan, is Tim Seward. The place went nuts. Tim was lifted onto their shoulders and they brought him to the front of the room and sat him down by the Corvette. After the hubbub died down a bit, I got through the crowd and gave him a big hug and asked, "How'd you do it?" He said, "You know, I was just 19 years old when I started this thing. I didn't have any business experience, so I went home and I asked myself, how would the international figure, the person I'd like to be, do the things I'm going to do?" He continued, "I straightened up my uniform, I got my files better organized, I followed through better with each client, I did a better job on each car, I planned my days a little bit more thoroughly, and just using that daily question caused me to upgrade everything. The upgrade compounded day after day throughout the year, and now I'm international sales leader." I said, "That's phenomenal." He said, "It gets better. I was sitting at home thinking, how would the international sales leader go to the international convention in New Orleans? I figured he'd go first class, one way." I said, "Wait a minute. You didn't know you'd won, and you bought a first class one-way ticket to New Orleans?" He said, "Do I need a ride home?" And I said, "No, you certainly don't. You won the Corvette." Isn't that amazing? That's a story contributed to The Aladdin Factor by Jim Cathcart. I love that. The stories go on and on in this book. I've only read a small fraction of them for you here on Living on Purpose today. And obviously, I am getting more in tune with this idea of ask, 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 and to just keep asking, even when you get a no. And I would like to get a yes from you, my listener, and all of my listeners of Living on Purpose on the Rabble Podcast Network. I have listeners all over the world, and you, who are listening right now from wherever you are one of them. My request, and I am asking you as my listener of Living on Purpose, which features famous voices as well as voices who are new to radio, what does Living on Purpose mean to you? Please send me an email. livingonpurposelynn@gmail.com, and Lynn is spelled L-Y-N-N. That email is livingonpurposelynn@gmail.com, and I am asking you with all of my heart and all of my spirit to send me an email telling me briefly what Living on Purpose means to you. In the subject line, please put "you asked." You asked. And I am asking, thank you in advance, because I know that you will write to me with what Living on Purpose means to you. That would be so wonderful. Not that it would be, it will be. The book today that I've been quoting from, and one that I highly recommend to you, also along with just reading books in general, it is such a gift that we're given to be able to read and share language and ideas. This is The Aladdin Factor by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. Lynn Thompson, Rabble Podcast Network. Talk to you next week on Living on Purpose.